we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian G2, read by Neil Sleet.
About 550 flood defence staff are threatened with redundancy. Chris Smith hopes that with an election around the corner, the views of floating voters might well force a change of heart.
And our thanks to everyone who sent us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Sarah Pascoe. And opposite them on my left, Bob Mills and Fred McCauley. Jeremy, whose overture was rejected by the band?
This is Clegg. Oh, yes. He is such a tart, isn't he? Basically, the Liberals are such a bunch of floozies. They're basically anybody's. And with an election in prospect, he can't decide between Labour and the Tories. And he's just going, wow, I do find both of you gentlemen so appealing. It's hard. It's quite hard. I find myself becoming feverish trying to decide between you. I might have a mint julep on the veranda. And there the analogy ends. But he sort of said that he would be fine to be in coalition with Labour. But then Miliband and Bulls were told this, and they couldn't say, oh, did he say that? Oh, bless. Oh, that's nice. Oh, give him my love. I think we kind of got off on the wrong foot when he got into bed with the Tories, but he seems nice bloke. They can't say that. They have to say, well, in your dreams, bitch. You know.
Well, Ed Miliband, I quite liked, he said, what I'm looking for is a majority Labour government. I thought, well, try Cuba. I have no idea. No idea. Who do we think it's going to be? Anybody got any thoughts on this?
I think probably the Conservatives and Labour.
What is your view on politics, Sarah? Are you very interested in politics?
I am interested, but I try not to have an opinion because I always feel like there's more information to get before I work out who I like the most or the least.
Oh, darling, you'd be a perfect Lib Dem.
Can they have a coalition of all three?
That would be a national government. We have to have a war in order to do that.
Which we can sort out for you. Shall we have a war?
Get everyone together.
In fact, next year is going to be the first year when we haven't been at war for ages, isn't it? Once we're out of Afghanistan, that's it.
Oh, but they'll find something short.
It's a long time for next year, son.
Yeah, if I can just lend a Scottish voice to this. Don't count your chickens.
Do you think that it could become open warfare then between Scotland and England?
It'll be a series of over the borders rushes.
I don't know why that sounds rather thrilling.
did Balls not change his tune? Did Balls not initially say that he'd
never... Can you say Ed Balls? It just sounds so weird. You talk in there with your rushes. Just talk about Mr. Balls or something.
I'm not talking about Mr. Balls. Oh.
He was the least popular of the Mr. Men, wasn't he? He was the one who always arrived on the space
hopper. Roger Hargreaves couldn't get away, wasn't he? And it was such an easy drawing.
So do you not think it was Ed Miliband, since we're giving them all first names, do you not think it was Ed Miliband that said, Mr. Balls? You're being too kind to him. That's not our party policy.
Well, they've got to get Liberals to vote Labour, you see, because, and so if they say, yeah, we like the Liberals, then the Liberals will say, oh, we'll just vote Liberal then.
But surely they're not going to do it with Nick Clegg. There's going to be a vacancy at the top of the Lib Dems if this is going to happen. We'll have to have that other Lib Dem.
People forget.
Sandy, instead of Clegg, could you say Mr. Penis?
But who are we going to... I mean, we'd have to... Who do we have if Mr. P is not going to be... I can't even put that word in my mouth.
We should do something.
I just feel nauseous. So who's going to have the bank?
We should do something like The Voice.
Yeah.
Because all of the politicians, it's really difficult to get over what they look like.
That's
true. So we don't listen enough to their policies. No. And so if everyone in the country gets a spinny chair, apart from those who want to be elected, and then we listen to what they're saying and then we press our button.
Who's going to replace Clegg? Come on now. Who are the other Lib Dems that
it could
heard?
Be the one that we like. Cable.
Cable?
People like him because he's angry. He just hates being in government.
It is strange Doctor he's, Who hat
he's
that
he's better
wear.
Than the other one I can think of, which is Lloyd George, so I...
Danny Alexander. He's looking for work.
Oh, won't he be... He's Scottish, isn't he, Dan?
Yes.
Yes, but
oh, yes.
He won't be around.
Why? What have you heard?
No, I'm just guessing. Did you want to discuss this?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't want to discuss it. I want to go home.
What, before they close the border? Ed Miliband has rebuffed a suggestion from Nick Clegg that Labour could form a coalition with the Lib Dems at the next election. A lot of commentators were interested that Clegg is prepared to pop the question before the election, as opposed to the question he'll be asking after the election, would you like fries with that? Speaking on ITV's Daybreak this week, Ed Miliband refused to be drawn on the prospect of a coalition, sticking to his more familiar territory of fashion advice and horoscopes. 2 points to Jeremy. Sarah, who's making it harder to have foreign friends with benefits?
Ian Duncan Smith. So he has come up with some new ideas about limiting, because some people think that immigrants are going to come over here because we have such a brilliant country to be unemployed in. And so they would just come here, get a free house and money to buy stuff with. And so he's stopping that by saying that you have to be a working immigrant, which means you have to have earned over £150 a week. And also you have to wait for 3 months before you can claim it. And also you never get housing benefit. So nobody wants to be his friend anymore.
There's no evidence that anybody is actually coming here for those reasons. It's all just to make us look the other way. Because it's like you hear when you know, with cab drivers, I tell you what, the immigrants, they land at Heathrow Airport and you know what happens, they get off a plane, they give them a house made of gold straight away. Suitcase full of money. Every time they take some of the money out, it magically reappears. They meet a leprechaun who gives them free wishes. I tell you. And the thing is, there's all sorts of other things like tax avoidance and money wasted on Trident that we should be looking at. But the government's saying, no, look at that, and ignore the fact that irritable Duncan syndrome is stealing money from blind people and saying that blind people can't have benefits, they're just not looking hard enough.
But fundamentally, so immigrants can only claim benefits if they don't need benefits. That's fundamentally... I mean, he's a genius.
And they can't walk on pavements, because that's paid for by the state, and they can't walk under streetlights or go in parks or ring the fire brigade or use roads.
And their children can't have hair.
Their children can't have hair. Because their hair might be colonised by Arnott's.
I did like it. Ian Duncan Smith said that immigrants were being drawn here by the attractiveness of our benefit system. No. Have you been to a Job Centre Plus? It's like Shangri-La.
I know. I had this image of a man propping up his dead mother, going, "Isn't she beautiful? Isn't she lovely? Give her a kiss. Aren't you very attractive?"
You're slightly unnerving, Sarah. I just said. Quick extra question. Who have the bishops been bashing?
Cameron and Duncan Smith.
Yeah,
they've been saying that there are so many poor people now and it's so terrible that it's an evil system. That why they're getting involved, I don't know. But they seem to think that they should now be talking about Christian charity and looking after poor people. So the bishop, I wish I had the name of a bishop or a teammate who cared...
Brian.
I could write unobtrusively, but I don't have either of those things. But one of the bishops...
It's Bishop of Durham.
Oh, I could have guessed that, couldn't I? It'd be him or Bath and Wells getting involved, wouldn't it?
So the Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nicholls, he was the one saying it as well. He's the one who said the thing about taking away the safety net that was supposed to be there for people when they were hard up. That's what the Conservatives have destroyed.
Can I just say, Sarah, you appear to be showing off, giving him both his names and where he's bishop of.
I
tried to help Bob out by writing the only bishop I was aware of.
Stortford. Bishop Stortford has said...
And I was cheating, though, Fred, because I just asked God.
Ian Duncan Smith has announced that European Union migrants will have to show they have earned at least £150 a week for 3 months before claiming benefits under plans to stop them taking advantage of the welfare system. These measures hope to deter the tide of EU citizens who want to come into this country attracted by our beautiful weather, booming economy and wise political leadership. IDS cautioned that changes must be done in conjunction with other European states or there would be a danger of tit-for-tat changes made by other governments. Tit-for-tat was also, of course, a short-lived raunchy antiques game show. on Channel 5, hosted by... hosted by Shane Ritchie. Meanwhile, 26 Church of England bishops have written a letter to David Cameron criticising benefit cuts. The bishops are led by the Bishop of Durham, who is fourth in the church hierarchy behind the Archbishop of Canterbury, God, and the woman in charge of the biscuits in the church hall. 2 points to Sarah. Bob, who won't be able to say, EU Jimmy?
Really? It's the long... It's the latest thing in the in Alex Salmond's long-running, ridiculous campaign.
Take that tedium out of your voice. We're excited by it.
So he said we're going to be independent. So the first thing he does is they've got no current fiscal policy. I will keep the pound. And all the chancellors down here say, yeah, OK, you won't, by the way. Oh, they're bullying us. Look how they're bullying us. Well, we'll sort you out when we leave and we're in the European Union. And Manuel Barroso says, OK, yeah, you won't, though. You know that, don't you? You know, it don't work like that. If you leave the European Union, you can't leave on Monday, join Tuesday, right? It's not like the Social Democrats or something like that. You have to... It's a long, drawn-out process. And now so he's whining on again about being bullied, because if you're part of the UK and the UK's in the European Union and you leave the UK, by definition, you leave the European Union. Simple as that. And he's saying, oh, well, that's fine. And Nicola Sturgeon is saying, oh, well, that's fine. They'll welcome us with open arms. They won't, because the Spaniards won't have you, because if the Spaniards let the Scottish in, then the Basques will kick up and say, what about us? We're a nation who want independence. The Belgians won't have you, because then the Walloons will kick up and then there will be trouble. And the French won't have you because of the Bretons, because they want independence. And they said, why can't we do what the Scots do? And they said, well, if you want to eat bad food and... You're welcome to try that, but you're not having independence.
Oh, I feel really sorry for Scotland now. I do. It finally plucks up the courage to divorce the UK, only to realise none of the other countries find it attractive.
No. It's going to be horrible, isn't it? Where do you stand, Fred? Well...
Bob. Are you on Twitter? Because Marcus Brigstocke stuck his head above the parapet last week and was roundly shot down. And that is what's happening. It is becoming a very bitter dispute, and there's still a long way to go.
But I feel sorry. I have to say, the way in which Scotland is covered in general, there was a coalition proposal to increase retirement age to 67 that we're talking about this week. And it said, according to the Telegraph, the coalition's proposal to increase retirement age to 67 may not be necessary thanks to lower life expectancy in Scotland. And I just... say strange use of the word thanks there.
But we'll be a different country as well, though. If Scotland's no longer part of the UK, the UK will be very different as well. We'll have a smaller population, we'll be poorer, we won't have as many MEPs.
But we'll still be in the EU. Because we'll still be united, a bit less united.
We won't have to reapply.
No.
You did mistakenly call it an election, Bob. It's a referendum, and there might be a referendum for UK, remainder of the UK, should independence go ahead, on whether the remainder of the UK stays in Europe. One thing that I did think was funny last week was Alex Salmond on television saying, these politicians. I said, all right, so what are you?
Well, European Commission President José Manuel Barroso has said it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for an independent Scotland to join the European Union. If independent, Scotland would have to apply for EU membership in the usual way, a series of drinking challenges, followed by an arm wrestle with Angela Merkel. Scotland would become one of the few European countries who are not part of the EU, like Norway and Legoland. The main block to entry would be Spain, who fear that it would encourage Catalans, which is like Matalan, but for cats.
Do you know why the Basques won't leave? Because you can't put all your Basques in one exit.
2 points to Bob. Fred, who has said that commuter criticism wasn't fair?
The rail companies that have been criticised by the passengers who took part in a survey. There were three things wrong, or three predominantly wrong things. One, not enough seats. Two, a lot of delays. And three, the toilets not working properly. You need to put Wellingtons on to go into them. And a lot of people said that they would actually consider paying more if they could get an enhanced service. Now, the enhanced service they're talking about is a seat and it being on time. and a toilet you can use, which I don't think is an enhanced service at all. I think that's what we would call a service. 20% of the people said that they were quite happy with the way things were. The other four people out of five couldn't take part in the survey because they were already late for work or bursting for the loo. But it's an improvement. The last time they did a survey, the three things that were wrong were the trains, the stations and the tracks. And they've got rid of most of those, so that's all fine.
But this is southeastern trains particularly who come in from Kent and Sussex. And the reason they're saying it's unfair, and it's a stroke of spin doctoring genius from the people at southeastern trains, they're saying, no, well, of course they're not happy on our trains. Why would they be happy? They're going to work. Ask them when they get. And do you know what? It's true, because the Trans-Siberian Railways during the Stalinist purges consistently scored low. and that's what it is. And yet, do you know the amazing thing about this? You may think I've made this up. I haven't. What came top with 70%? It was Merseyrail.
Merseyrail, that's right, Merseyrail.
They're not unhappy because they're not going to work. That's the reason.
That is actually, despite the implicit bigotry in that, that is quite a coherent point, because if you're delayed on your way on holiday, it's all right in the end. Yeah. But when you get to work late, you don't say, we've had a terrible journey, but now we're here, it's all been worthwhile. It's been an absolute nightmare, but we're not going to let it spoil our day project managing a new IT system for an accountancy firm.
I travel with Southeastern all the time, and they are honestly unreliable. The last time I was on for so long, I sat there and I fantasised about whether I could get my mail redirected to the carriage. Just unbelievable.
The good thing about the flooding is that many people are now used to walking knee-deep in raw sewage, so when they get on a train, they feel quite at home.
Do a Scouse accent for me, Bob. What is a Scouse accent?
I wouldn't dream of insulting the people from the northeast of England.
You just have
it's
done.
In the northwest, you Bert. You're from Chester. You, Bob, are from Chester.
I forgot where I was born then. That's what a pull I pulled over my previous life. I forgot. Of course they're the northwest.
He's come down here and he's trying to talk all posh. There he is. But he's a right rotten scouse and underneath it, so he is.
So the real question is, do people hate work because of the commute or hate commuting because of their jobs?
Presumably they asked half the people on their way home.
Oh, yeah, OK.
Yeah? Maybe they were equally disappointed.
But it is quite interesting that everyone who works for Southeastern assumes that people hate their jobs. I mean,
most people do. I mean, this isn't that much fun doing this. Do you know what? I long for the week when we could sit here and say the world is run by such enlightened, brave, compassionate and wise people that I can't find a single disparaging thing to say about any of them. Good night.
Do you take the train very much? I don't know, you're an underground sort of person.
Yeah, I get the train all the time. That's the thing, I don't understand this logic that you're talking about, because actually, if you didn't like your job, you'd be pleased to get there later and spend less time there.
Oh, that's
so that's the flaw in what I think they're saying.
Yeah, but it doesn't work like that, because people have horrible jobs, and I've had horrible jobs. It's like the bold Jeremy says, you can't just turn up there, because they all work in the same office, and they know that the worst thing is the train. But when you turn up 10 minutes late and say, I'm really sorry, the trains were terrible. Someone who's been making the same journey themselves for 30 years says, you might try leaving half an hour earlier.
So with the commuter train, say if I'm going to Manchester or something for a gig and the train is late, I get my money back or I get a voucher for the ticket. Does that happen with all the commuters? No.
You're so sweet.
What must life be like for ordinary people? They always seem so busy, don't they? They're very good with their hands. One came to the house once and fixed the lavatory. Very practical. Drank instant coffee. Had no idea what a cafetiere was.
Actually, I had an idea which won't make me very popular, but it's this. Because I'm a comedian and my job is at night time, but sometimes someone will give me a job where I have to get up in the morning and I have to get on the busy tube with all the people that haven't made the same life decisions as me. So I think that there should be a separate carriage for artists and creators where we get to sit there and read poems.
I had a train manager on a journey home a few weeks ago who had a great sense of humour, and he came on the public address. Bing bong. Hello, I'm Bill, your train manager. I won't be coming through the train today. I'm being held in this wee room against my will. Enjoy your journey.
After finishing bottom of a witch survey for passenger satisfaction, Southeastern Trains responded by claiming that people weren't miserable about travel, but about having to go to work. The survey questioned 7,400 commuters in one overcrowded Southeastern carriage. Southeastern Trains' new strapline is, "Stop blaming us for your miserable lives." Forcing the Tories to choose another election campaign slogan. The report was published in Consumer Magazine Witch, which is a sister publication to Assertiveness Magazine When, which also... which also publishes a guide to Jeremy Clarkson's career called Why. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Sarah have got 5 points, but so too have Bob and Fred. We start round two with a television listening.
9 p.m, line of duty. A brutal attack on a police convoy leaves three officers dead and a protected witness fighting for his life. Contains some violence.
And our thanks to Mike Sullivan for sending us that. Jeremy, who's telling the under-fives that it's their own time they're wasting?
The Good Schools survey or something has said that people who claim to be able to tutor the under-fives are charlatans, which is excellent that they are using words like that. And I would add that they are mountebanks and frauds and ne'er-do-wells. I mean, under-fives should be let to play. And, I mean, if you really can't potty train them, maybe you need to get some kind of mentor, or maybe they need to swim with dolphins or something in order to learn how to use a potty, or you can get a horse. Horses are quite therapeutic, and you could get a horse to use a potty, and then maybe the toddler would use it after them if it wasn't too full. But basically... leave kids alone, but it's parents who live through their children. We opened a bottle of champagne because Joshua got 5 A's. So if he hadn't got 5 A's, you'd have drunk the slightly inferior Prosecco then, would you? But you wouldn't have taken him out for a meal. You'd have bought him a sandwich from the garage. Stop living through your kids. You know, while you're arguing about how to bring up your children, you're arguing in the corner with your partner about which one's good cop and which one's bad cop, your children are quietly growing up on their own, nothing to do with you, bringing themselves up, working away at school. Stop claiming credit for their achievements. Because the thing is, if they don't achieve, you just suddenly feel all betrayed then. So I don't know why, just because the old one was the favourite, I don't know why the younger one is so traumatised. I don't know why, just because he has to listen to us arguing all the time, drinking and spending all the money on wine instead of holidays, he's such a damaged child. We've done our best with him. Just leave your kids alone, that's what I say.
You could get a nanny for your child if you don't know what you're doing. They're really easy to get. What you do is you write out a description of the one you want and you put it on the fireplace and then...
I had a great thing bringing up kids, because all you want for your kids is that they should do better than you do. And from the age of 3, my kids had already done that. But I did see that headline...
Your potty's full, Bob, by the way.
I did see that headline and thought, oh, OK, yeah, that makes sense. Because what I saw was... tuition for the under-fives is pointless. And I thought, that's true. If you've got a kid under 5, just stick him in front of pointless for 45 minutes. And he'll pick something up.
I was never worried about the standard of my daughter's education, because I thought, well, I can always sit her exams in her place. No one will notice, I think.
Children teach themselves to speak, don't they? They're autodidacts, children. Nobody teaches children how to speak. They teach themselves just by listening.
So they do have to be around people, though, because feral children can't talk.
No, but they can talk to chimps and they can swing through the trees.
Yeah, maybe this is good. Maybe it takes pressure off parents. I think often it's so difficult now. It seems so difficult. You want to do everything you can possibly for your children. You would be paying for a tutor because someone told you it was worthwhile. It's good to let them off a hook and go, yeah, let them be children.
Yeah.
Because their brains will just form.
Roam the streets, set fire to dogs like we used to. I think it's...
I missed this story, I have to be honest. It might just be because we've got a different education system. But is it seriously no tutors for under fives?
People are having giving tutors. 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds tutoring, yeah. See, you probably, Fred, think Baby Gap is a shop, but it's actually the year kids take off between nursery and reception. Go, child, find yourself.
I've got a 4-year-old niece who's a chalet girl.
People who tutor children under five are nothing but charlatans, according to the Good School Guide. Pressure to get into the best schools has led to a growing number of 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds receiving tutoring on evening and weekends. Despite no evidence that the tutoring actually helps, many parents spend £40 an hour, which can equate to £480 a month, or £4,500 a year, said a 2-year-old. In his TED talk. 2 points.
Was that his big TED talk or his little TED talk?
2 points to Jeremy. Sarah, listen to this. Sarah, who has taken his family to task over their antique collection.
I know this one. This is Prince William has said he's going to go around Buckingham Palace with a baseball bat smashing up anything made out of dead elephants. And no one's going to stop him. As a protest to the ivory trade.
What do you think about that?
I think everyone is silly. Right. I think everyone in this country is really, 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 really silly about animals. And I say that as someone who loves and respects animals very much.
You're a vegan now, you're
not. I am. And so I find it really odd. So this story came out. Prince William, obviously, elephants are really endangered. And even though the elephants that made the ivory in his house are already dead, destroying those works of art means that you destroy the worth of them. You don't sell them on to anybody. Because the other argument people could say is, well, why don't you sell them and give that money to protecting endangered elephants? And other people were saying, if there's less ivory becomes more valuable, then actually poachers are more likely then to get the elephants. But then every article then just had comments underneath going, he went boar hunting a month ago, and here's a picture of Harry in 2004 next to a water buffalo. And these are all people that eat sausages. And honestly, like, the life of an elephant is royalty compared to a pig in a farm.
But I don't see how destroying these things is help. I mean, it's as much an act of contrition as, I don't know, sellotaping piano keys to an elephant. Do you know what I mean? Say, oh, sorry, but here's your ivory back.
It's more hypocritical to say, hey, guys, we should really stop buying and selling ivory when you've got a palace full of hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of ivory. It's a really huge symbolic statement that also seems like a terrible waste.
But, I mean, for wildlife, it isn't just things like ivory. It's the trade in tiger parts. Apparently, it's grown massively. Because there's a demand in the new Chinese middle class.
If something goes wrong with your tiger and you need to get a part for it.
Yes.
from the internet.
No, but it's using them as medicine. So, I mean, what I think about that is if you want to use a tiger member as medicine, I think the tiger has to be alive and attached, to it when you try. I think that would be...
In fairness to the lad, I think what he's saying is similar to this. Look, it's a terrible thing. Elephants are dying. People are killing elephants. Now, if they were killing them and eating them, that's one argument. They're not. They're killing them, cutting their tusks off, and then just leaving them to rot. So what can we do about this? And I think all he's saying is we've got 1,200 pieces of ivory worth all this money. Why don't we, not quietly, but by making a huge statement, say, because people always seem to think we're role models, why don't we say we're going to junk all this because we think ivory is bad and we don't want it in our house, and then maybe some other royal families will do it, and then maybe people will think, what's all this fuss about? What's the problem with ivory? And maybe it will educate people a bit more. Yep. There are some downsides. Sing-song night's going to be a nightmare around the palace. Isn't it? Because the piano's going to sound like that. So some stuff isn't going to work. But there are people, I mean, Virginia McKenna thinks it's a good idea, and she's the queen of all things wildlife. Paula Kahumba, who's the wildlife director in Kenya, who knows what the problems are on the ground, she thinks it's right. Brian Sewell apparently doesn't agree. Brian Sewell said, Yeah.
Bob, tell me more about this sing-song night at the palace that you seem to know
every
so
first
much about.
Day. Yeah. Sarah, have you not been invited?
No, I haven't.
Following last week's summit on the illegal wildlife trade, Prince William has told conservationist Dr. Jane Goodall that he would like to see all the ivory held by the royal family destroyed. The royal family owns some 1,200 artefacts made wholly or partly from ivory, including fans, furniture, and Princess Michael of Kent. William has been called a hypocrite because the week before the summit on poaching, he went hunting in Spain. But to be fair, there are a lot more Spaniards than we need. A family of African elephants thanked Prince William for his kind words, saying, "We won't forget this." Fred, where is it okay for students to skip lectures and go to the pub?
It's down here in this neck of the woods, isn't it?
Yeah.
A university. It's actually in London.
In London, South Bank.
Many universities where they've built a bar and they're giving the students drink, although some of it might not be alcoholic. It might be placebo drinks, which in my book would predict a riot, unlike anything you've seen since the 60s.
It wasn't placebo, it was a Kaiser Chiefs predictor.
Oh, I've got
one for the middle class, their version of that song, I Predict Disquiet. But
for really old people, I like peace and quiet.
I have a placebo drink sometimes. You never have a placebo? Sometimes I have a placebo drink. I do, I have a G&T with no tonic at all.
There was a story I heard, a chap claimed that there was a golf club in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and he had his round of golf, had a couple of gin and tonics, jumped in the car and he thought, oh, maybe I'm a bit borderline. He got pulled by the police, gave him the breathalyzer. All right, you're free to go, sir. Absolutely nothing. What? He said, but I've had a couple of gin and tonics. Well, there you are, zero. And he went back and they fired the steward. He'd been stealing the gin out of the bottle. The water.
But this is a psychological test. It's a lab, isn't it? That's basically...
Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, I thought it was an all-inclusive university fee kind of thing, where you got all your drink and food for nothing. Which, I mean, we don't have fees in Scotland, but I think for £9,000 it might be worth paying that and not having a bar bill.
Can I just say, you keep saying university, and it is the University of the South Bank, but we all know it's South Bank Poly, isn't it?
Can I just say that lots of polytechnics have now grown up and are really marvellous universities? Can I just say that?
Are you a Chancellor of one?
I am, at Portsmouth.
Chancellor, janitor.
I went to Southampton University, which has just applied to become a polytechnic.
London South Bank University have created an elaborate fake pub that's actually a psychology lab. The experiments are run by students researching the effects of alcohol on behaviour, or as they're more commonly known, students. When questioned on how the study was going, one researcher commented, "God, I love you. I really bloody love you." At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Sarah have got 9 points, but so too have Bob and Fred. We start round three with a headline from the BBC News website.
Facebook pays $16 billion for what Mark Zuckerberg calls the incredibly valuable WhatsApp massaging service.
Thanks to everyone who sent us that. Jeremy, whose religious rulings are on another planet?
Well, this is a bit of a scare story because it begins, "Muslim clerics issue fatwa," which automatically makes everyone terrified. They're going to ban Christmas. They're going to ban in Christmas. They ban Christmas in a school. It didn't happen. It's just a kid with a headscarf shut the door too firmly and a bit of tinsel fell off the tree. That's all that happened. But what it is, a fatwa, is not necessarily an order whereby Salman Rushdie has to spend 5 years in the Groucho Club pretending he's hiding. It's not that. It's just religious opinion, and it states that it's sinful to go to Mars because seemingly a bunch of Saudis are buying tickets to go to Mars, which is really stupid because there's nothing there. You can't breathe. There's no lavatory facilities. There's no picnic area. There's no shops. It's just stupid. It's people who are bored with their lives and think, let's go somewhere inhospitable. Anyway, so Mars is a horrible place. There's nothing in Mars. You can't go outside. What's the point in a place where you can't... Well, you could say that about Wolverhampton, it's true. But you can't go outside in Mars. It's pretty, it's red, but it's all red. This is not like the Isle of Wight where you've got different bits in a test tube like in your nan's front room. It's all red. It's boring. So basically, Muslim clerics are just saying, don't buy a ticket and go somewhere where there's nothing to do and you'll hate it.
I think the religious committee on this sound rather sweet. Do you not think they sound like a sort of overprotective dad?
I love the wording of it, because it said that if he went to Mars, you'd be vulnerable to death.
Yeah. Oh.
What they're saying is, no, don't go there, because it's too dangerous. Not that there's nothing to do, because there are pubs on Mars.
OK.
There's no atmosphere, obviously. Thank you. But what they're saying is, no, don't go, because you're putting your life in grave danger. Yeah. And under the law of Islam, suicide is a sin.
Well, okay? And God is very unforgiving of people who go to other planets. I mean, you look at Neil Armstrong, right? He went to the moon, 43 years later, dead.
Yeah.
The 50% of the fatwas begin with do rather than don't. Because if 100% begin with don't...
Now, that's the book, then... The Do's and Don'ts of Fatwas. That's a different book.
Just heading to the punchline. I was just going to say...
Oh, sorry.
Just in case you were wondering, I was going to say, in that respect, Islam is no different from the Free Presbyterian Church of Scotland, because every decree that comes from them is don't.
They'll make that work.
Yeah, they'll make that work. It'll be lovely. Tack a laugh on the end.
Right in the Mr. Balls.
No, but I feel really bad now. I've spoiled one of your jokes. Listen, you take one of mine.
Sorry, I've got the other
Honestly,
one.
Honestly, no, I've got 18 pages of them, Fred.
Pity you haven't used any.
Your patch has slipped off again, hasn't it, Sandra? She gets like that.
Muslim leaders in the United Arab Emirates have issued a fatwa against anyone who goes to live on Mars, arguing that there is no righteous reason to be there. This is especially disappointing for one particular astronaut, Commander Salman Rushdie, who quit novel writing after the last fatwa and spent 20 years retraining. He's now moving to Denmark to become a cartoonist. The committee argued that it poses a real risk to life and can never be justified in Islam before also placing a fatwa on several burger vans on the A11. Over 200,000 people have applied to Mars One, the organisation planning the voyage, who have sought the advice of Southeastern Trains on how to cram that many people inside a single shuttle. 2 points to Jeremy. Bob, who wants to give Snap Happy Diners food for thought?
Oh, this is the French. Well, not the French as a nation, but their chefs. People take pictures. When you go to a restaurant, presumably, you get a meal and you take a picture of it. Have you seen this? This is so beautiful. I've got to take a picture of this. I think it's more likely they're taking a picture and sending, can you believe, 38 quid for this? Right? It's more like evidence than anything else. And the French chefs are saying, oh, we don't like it. Because you should come here and it should be a family, you know, you're with people, you shouldn't be taking photos of my food because it's my creation, it's my art, you're infringing my copyright. Mate, it's a bit of meat on a plate. You know, and also, you see, I'm a different generation. I won't eat at a place unless there's pictures in the menu. No, I want to see what it looks like. Don't just tell me what it's... Don't describe it in a foreign language. Show me. In fact, in the window, I like to see the... They do that. Ponties, they used to have the dishes made up, sprayed with lacquer. So there's...
Slightly faded.
Yeah, it was lovely. My sister, when she met her first boyfriend, who she eventually married, who said, oh, no, he's lovely and classy. We went to a restaurant and we paid after we'd eaten.
Different upbringings. But my father gave me two pieces of advice. The first was never trust a man in a ready-made bow tie. And and the second was never eat anywhere that has photographs of the food.
Honestly, it makes perfect sense to me. Why don't you show it me?
But you then, when the food comes, you then compare it to the picture and go, that's not
all
quite...
All right, well, why do they do it with the pudding then? The pudding, they bring it to your table. It's been sitting there for God knows how long. And they wheel it up to your table and say, do you want some of this? Well, why couldn't you have done this with the starter and the main?
God, I don't remember the last time I was there. Someone, there was a dessert trolley. How marvellous. It was always, would you like the oranges in Cointreau? Or, what was it, Black Forest Gâteau was always a big thing, wasn't it, on the dessert trolley?
Black Forest Gâteau, a bit of pecan pie.
Creme caramel.
Oh. I'll stop it now, I'm hungry.
You're probably... Bob, you're probably the only person I know that could go hungry in Yo Sushi. Watching it all going round thinking, yeah, that looks good. I wonder what the real one looks like.
A group of leading French restaurateurs has tried to ban diners taking photos of their food. It's flattering in a certain way, but we want to encourage people to relax, screamed a chef at a sobbing customer. Chef Alexandre Gauthier has introduced a symbol on his menu of a camera with a line through it, right next to the traditional symbol of a vegan being shot. Chef Giles Goujon, a man so obsessed with food he's named after deep-fried chicken, runs the restaurant L'Auberge de Vieux Puy, which roughly translates to House of the Camera-Shy Aubergine. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Hardy. Oh.
This was sent in by Martin Parker, and it's from The Telegraph. It says, betting suspended on Queen stepping down. A leading bookmaker has suspended betting on the Queen stepping down this year after a large sum was placed in the Windsor area.
Ms. Pascoe.
This is from Matt Goldsack. I found this on groupon.co.uk. Buy an acre on the moon, Mars or Venus, $17.99 with free delivery. Delivery note, allow up to 7 working days, will fit most letterboxes.
Mr. McCauley.
This is from Eve Jones. Thank you, Eve, for sending this in. It's from The Times. Photographer Simon Roberts was hired as an election artist to take digital images of campaigning politicians, including Tory leader David Cameron, Lib Dem leader Nick Clegg, and former Prime Minister Gordon Brown. Other photographers have been since hired to shoot sitting MPs.
Let's take a look at the final score. Bob and Fred have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Sarah with 14. Before we leave you, here is a correction from the Danoon Observer sent in by Ray Alger.
The old poof, which started the fire at 7 Douglas Cottages, as reported last week, referred to an item of furniture. And not the owner.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Sarah Pascoe, Bob Mills and Fred McCauley. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleeks. The chair's script is written by Rodri Cooks, Ben Partridge and Andy Walton, with additional material by Joe Hampson, James Bugg and Ronya Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.